The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning. Oh, yeah, here we go. Another day. Later on today, apparently, Beto O'Rourke will announce that he is running for president of the United States on a platform of I don't know.
Let me rephrase that to be harshly accurate. Later today, Beto O'Rourke will announce that he plans on dropping out of the presidential race in March of next year. No, look, you and I had a discussion during the break about financing. Number one, I was borrowing some change to go to the vending machine. But when it comes to fundraising, when it comes to fundraising.
That's financing.
But when it comes to fundraising, who's the guy right now? There actually are two, but the guy is Uncle Joe, Joe Biden. He's well-seasoned. He knows a lot of people. He knows the game. He knows how to create successful campaigns to, you know, programs to raise that money, events, whatever it might be. Beto got a lot of money from outside of Texas to beat Ted Cruz. But let's be clear on that. Ted Cruz was the draw. The hatred for Ted Cruz was the big draw there. Just like it was in other races where Democrats were taking on someone who was hated in the Republican Party. So I don't know that that same appeal is there on a national level.
And remember, also the belief that Ted Cruz was weak in Republican circles because of his opposition to Trump.
Yes.
And the fact, as we said at the RNC, when you had a conservative booed at the RNC, which was Ted Cruz. And so I believe that the Democrats viewed that as a, you know, as a weakness. But with Slate.com and the article coming out, Josh Voorhees' column on the fact that he doesn't say anything. He doesn't stand for anything. He won't take an opinion on, and not even a generalized opinion on anything.
Right.
He's saying that I'm running to bring everybody together.
Right.
One of the problems. Go ahead.
That used to work so well in 2008. Hope and change, but you can't get away with it anymore.
One of the challenges is, and maybe it's the social media world that we live in, is everything moves quicker these days. The news cycle moves these days. What people think about, you know, their opinions of politicians changes very, very quickly.
The rock star cycle.
the rock star cycle's very, very quickly. Look, nobody wants to deal with Hillary anymore.
No.
Hillary, it's like, go, get out of here. Right. We don't even want to deal with you.
Right.
We don't care what you have to say. But I think even more important than Hillary, because Hillary's been around now since I've been a talk show host.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's a long time that she's been around.
Yeah.
And so you can say, look, okay, we're going on three decades that the Clintons have been around.
Bill's what really been around.
What really, I think, is telling, and we've stated this a few times this week, but I think it is worth repeating, is that when Representative Omar gave her comments on Obama, and she backtracked, but she really wasn't criticized. And when she made the statement, she implied that Obama was a murderer because he used drones.
Right.
That he was a murderer. Think about that. And there was no outrage, and that was after everything had gone out, and the anti-Semitic remarks and everything else. And then it was a day and a half later where she came out with those remarks implying that Obama was a murderer, and there was no outrage within the Democrat Party.
Right.
None. You didn't see it on social media. Nobody came out and defended Obama. Think about this. Do you understand the deity-like status that he had in 2008? I mean, it was unlike anything I'd ever seen before. Now, you and I have talked about the fact that there is some political idolatry that's associated to Trump.
Yeah.
That was associated to Trump in the very beginning. Trump can never do anything wrong. Whatever Trump does, if it seems like he's doing anything wrong, he's really not doing anything wrong. He's playing 15th dimensional chess, and that's just part of the negotiations. And anything that he does is all part of the negotiation. So you can't say anything that he does is ever wrong because he's always right. Yeah. Well, that gets into political idolatry because, of course, candidates, no matter who they are, they make mistakes. They do things that are right. They do things that are wrong. They say things that are truthful. They say things that are untruthful. They all get caught up in it. Nobody is a deity on either side. But we never saw anything. Even the Trump political idolatry was nothing like you saw in Obama.
Well, because it was a different idolatry. It was idolatry because of him, who he was.
Right.
For Trump, it had something to do
with where he stood.
Where he stood, the issues he's been talking about for decades, and his experience in the business world.
Yes.
So it wasn't for nothing. It wasn't strictly on the fact that he looks cool or he acts cool or he says cool things. It was none of that. It was based on other things. Now, still, we cautioned against that and said, look, they all make mistakes. They're going to make mistakes. And when they become public servants, it's okay to critique them and criticize them, even if you vote for them. But with Obama, it was rock star because he was on stage.
Well, and I look at how quickly it changed. And again, it's not the be all end all. But I thought that the CNN, when they brought together that focus group, that every one of those Democrats, there were six on the focus group panel that voted for Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And in unison, they want nothing to do with Hillary, nothing to do with Sanders, nothing to do with Biden. They're gone. We need the new blood. And the genius of the party is Ocasio-Cortez. Well, look, that's emotion. That's not based on logic. That's not based on critical thinking. That is the emotion of people that in their lives, in my humble opinion, practice popular culture, pop star political idolatry. That changes very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Because just 2 years ago, those same people worshipped Hillary Clinton. And that's why I look at this election coming up and even the primary season for the Democrats. And Eric, I don't know where it's going. I said it yesterday. I think there's a possibility. And again, it's just a possibility. We don't claim to read the future. But I look at an Ocasio-Cortez, and I say to myself, will she burn out very quickly? Will they finally say, okay, she was all right for a while, and Kane, she was our idol there, but now because she has said such outrageous things, she's really useless. We can't win with her. She's just too impractical. Let's move on to somebody else.
Right.
And that's why I find it so hard to read what's going on. And I really wonder if part of O'Rourke is, look, I'm going to come out and say what I believe, but I'm going to wait until I do have to say it at the very last second, because I'll let everybody else get burned, because the cycle churns so quickly. You and I talked about Rahm Emanuel.
Yeah.
And whether when Rahm Emanuel ran for mayor of Chicago, his ultimate goal was to run for federal office and to be a senator or to be a president someday. And part of his comments the last couple of days might have been, you know, when he has been very critical of the Democrat Party and the radical left, is he looked at this and goes, my God, it changed so quickly. My chance of actually running ever for political office is gone now. We wonder whether Andrew Cuomo, mm-hmm, and the fact that now he might be interested in running if Biden isn't running, especially when he has come off so foolish in so many areas here in just the last year, is another desperate attempt, because he looks at it and says, just a year ago, they were talking about that I could be the guy for 2024. I better run now because my time may be over. I might consider running now because my time might be over, because this political idolatry, pop idol culture of adoring one candidate and the one candidate be all end all, that cycle doesn't last long, and it moves extremely quick, and it's moving extremely quick right now when you look, for example, at an Obama, where Obama can be called a murderer from a first term congresswoman after that congresswoman said incredibly anti-Semitic remarks that clearly upset the party, and a day and a half later is calling Obama a murderer, and there's no pushback at all. To me, that is, it just shows you how volatile the political, you know, idolatry of the Democrat Party is, how it can change within days and months, and even the period of a year can completely change, that somebody that was viewed as an idol, that the Hollywood people were chanting. They were creating songs with the chant of his, where you had Evan Thomas from NBC and MSNBC back in 2009 saying that Obama was godlike. Mm-hmm. The media was looking at him at godlike, and now it's like, eh, okay, he's a has-been. He's gone.
Right. Well, no, because just like the current Republican leader is Hitler, he's not Hitler the day he's out of office.
Right, exactly, right, yeah.
He's, and I think, too, a lot of that idolatry clearly fell short for a lot of those Democrats, where they were going, yeah, but what did he really do? What did he really do? I remember watching the protests. In fact, there was a news station here in Dallas. It was the night that five officers lost their lives in downtown Dallas. But hours before that happened, the leaders of that march in downtown Dallas, I watched them and I remember them saying that, and this is what, you know, because again, it was one of the TV stations that was doing a live Facebook or Periscope or something. One of their reporters was showing it live. And I remember this saying to myself, my gosh, I can't believe they just said that. But and two of the leaders, both African-American, what has Obama actually done for us? What has Hillary Clinton actually done for us? The point being is that now in the day of activists, it doesn't matter who you are. You're going to get called out. Eventually, they're coming around to you. Dianne Feinstein, Barack Obama. It doesn't matter.
You all end up being oppressors when you've been around too
you're
long.
You're part of the problem, because for the thing about today's activists, remember the mentality that started this all. Become a victim today if you're not already a victim, and if you are, find a new reason to be a victim. So what does that mean? Everybody outside of their group, of their cause, is an oppressor. Obama, Feinstein, doesn't matter. And you're next. It doesn't matter who you are. You're next. Because those that are leaders in these groups, they see themselves as the leaders now. They see themselves as the next civil rights leader. That's how they view themselves. If they're in office, it really doesn't matter. If they're a journalist, it really doesn't matter. They're trying to make a name for me. It's all about me, which means it's never about you.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Cold weather can affect your batteries more than any other component on the vehicle. Pay attention to these maintenance tips that may help assure your batteries are equipped to roll through the rest of winter. A fully charged battery is one of the best defenses against cold weather. Have your batteries tested before your next trip to ensure they're able to handle cold early morning starts and in order to maximize their lifespan. Another tip is to make sure your batteries are clean. Dirty batteries can discharge at a faster rate when the truck is idle. Dirt can also promote corrosion on terminals and connections, a problem that will only worsen in cold weather. Stop in to a TA truck service near you to have your batteries charged and inspected for harmful debris today.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Some audio coming up from CNN from yesterday where a Democrat out there talking about why you should impeach Trump and getting pushback from Jake Tapper. It was really, really interesting that it's there's nothing new. They keep going back to the same old, things that aren't obstruction of justice.
Right.
And we'll get to that coming up in a little bit. It's like, come up with something new because they haven't. And also, did you see that the head of the college cheating ring pleaded guilty, by the way.
There was a deal in place.
And he could serve close to 70 years in prison, but he walks through and says 750 families. He goes, look, I did it all. I arranged, and we'll have some of what he actually said and just how deep this went. Coming up following the bottom of the hour, because it is really fascinating, and one wonders how often this happens. You and I talked about this earlier. We've got a lot of discussion. Well, universities aren't fair. There's not fair, and there's illegal.
Right. Nothing is completely fair. You're always going to find someone who says that's not fair in any equation. That's not fair because that's not fair because, well, you can then you have to have the legal discussion of, you know, what is against the law and what is not. In today's world, there's a number of influences, I guess, along the way in any given chain of events. But the response has been, well, politicians walk into these offices of these, you know, the dean's office or whatever and shakes a hand and then all of a sudden his kid gets in. You know, that's on the dean. Because at that point, that is them looking at it. And if the kid is smart enough, you know, he passes the SAT with a flying colors, and it helps the school in recruiting. Well, this is the grandson of the former vice president. They can boast about that.
Yeah, we got the whole thing that, you know, legacy isn't fair. We're not talking about what's fair.
They use that as recruiting, and you can say you don't like them to use that as recruiting. If it works, they're going to use that as recruiting. As long as it's legal, then I really don't have a problem with it. I don't operate that way. I don't endorse people that way because I think the problem with that, the risk of that, is all of a sudden he's a senior. He's the grandson of the former vice president. Oh, then it comes out that the former vice president committed a crime. Because if you live by that sword, you die by that sword, and that's the risk. It's like any political endorsement or any endorsement of anybody who is famous, who is wealthy, who is a high profile. Well, if they're not family, it's going to be hard to get my endorsement. But that's not the way those schools operate, and as long as they're operating legally, then I really don't have a say-so there. Because I'm not sending them, at least I'm not sending them tuition for any of my children. I may be sending them some of my tax dollars, and I would love to see oversight reform on that level.
Well,
we've been screaming about that for years.
And a private school really can have whatever they choose as to what qualifies you to be a better candidate to go to their university.
Right.
It doesn't have to be fair.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily have to be based on grades, as we know.
Right.
Athletes get in.
Yep.
Even non-athletes posing as athletes get in. We'll get to that coming
Superimposed athletes.
Yes.
Photoshopped athletes.
forget college. Gary and Eric would have just given the money directly to their kids. Red Eye Radio.
Yeah, right.
Nope.
866-90-RED-EYE. The ringleader, this is from NBC News, the ringleader behind the $25 million college admission scam that implicated dozens of people, including Hollywood actresses Lori Loughlin and Felicity Huffman, said he has worked with more than 750 families. William Rick Singer, who pleaded guilty Tuesday in a Boston federal court to racketeering, money laundering, conspiracy, and obstruction of justice charges, said in a phone conversation recorded by the FBI that he helps the wealthiest families in the U.S. get their kids into school. Singer said he facilitated 761 side doors to admission. They want guarantees. They want this thing done. They don't want me messing around with this thing, according to court documents unsealed Tuesday. And so they want in at certain schools. According to investigators, parents paid Singer millions of dollars to boost their kids' chances of getting into schools such as Yale, Stanford, and Georgetown University by paying people to take tests for their children, bribing test administrators to allow that to happen, and bribing college coaches to identify applicants as athletes. Singer, who is 58 years old, faces a maximum sentence of 65 years if convicted. Well, he pleaded guilty. I'm absolutely responsible for it, he told U.S. District Judge Raya Zobel. I put everything in place. I put all the people in place and made the payments directly. Some of the parents spent between $200,000 to $6.5 million to ensure their children would get into the schools. Singer said the price depended on what schools the parents wanted to get their kids into, according to court documents unsealed on Tuesday.
Wow. Tens of millions of dollars. I mean, this entire organization, what he created, basically created a fake nonprofit. Then went out and I don't know how that happens. Is there a special rich people newsletter that goes out? But the word gets out somehow that this guy can help you. You want to get your kid in? I know a guy. Everybody knows a guy. When you're rich, you know a lot of guys. When it comes to school, you know the guy. And he was the guy. So he creates this fake nonprofit. You donate to that fake nonprofit. And then for some, if not all, what he did on the other end in getting them into the school, and of course, according to the allegations, some of the coaches and stuff were on the take, he would give them money, but he would also, fund their way in, their access, through a so-called scholarship, which was also fake, according to authorities. So he created this huge facade of a situation that was, basically just a handshake and a door knock, and that door being opened for these rich people.
Let's go to Paul in Knoxville, Tennessee. Paul, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. Hey, my question is, these kids that benefited from this, they had to take their entrance exam to begin with, but yet their scores were bogus. How come they don't have to retake their entrance exam to stay in the school?
Well, some of the universities are reviewing for, first of all, any prospective students that were, I know USC has been one of the schools that spoke out. Prospective students that are tied to the scam, they're not going to allow them to come into the school, and they may remove some of the students that are already there, some of the existing students that are there and are connected to this scam. I haven't heard on a wide scale, but that would be my approach. If you want in, I don't know that any school, once they do this, that first of all, and thank you for the call, I don't know that any school would let them back in, but I do believe they should require that they retake that SAT. But then once you're officially connected to that, by the way, some of the defense yesterday, well, it's not the kid's fault. In the case where the cheating was allowed, it's hard to me hard for me to believe that the student didn't know. So you have your proctor, you know, the fake proctor in that setting, according to at least the affidavit in at least one of the cases, where the student is sent and they get their alone room, right? And so then the proctor is overseeing it and correcting the answers. In one case, in the case of the Felicity Huffman's daughter, it actually meant a difference. Well, the difference in the SAT and the pre-SAT was about 400 points, according, again, to authorities. If the student got in that way, then my question is, what university would allow them in at all? I mean, you could see them removing the students. What about those who graduated?
No, I think they're. I can see the degrees being pulled.
I don't see. And now, so now the existing students are removed. The other students aren't allowed in. The prospective students that haven't gone in yet aren't allowed in. But what school would allow them in? Think about that.
Now?
Right.
Yeah, that's a great point.
I mean, I guess there are other colleges, but it's not going, certainly not going to be the college.
I can see colleges rescinding degrees of students that might have graduated a few years back because this was going on since 2011. I can see students being expelled from school, and you're out, you're done, you can't get back in this school. As to retaking the test again, that's whether they'd be allowed to do that or not, and I don't know whether they would be or not.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You're not in high school anymore.
Right.
So where do you go and take the test if you're not in high school anymore? And
right.
You've already committed fraud, and it could be proven you committed fraud on it. What happens at that point? I don't know. I don't know if that's happened before. I'm assuming that at some point students have been caught cheating on SATs, and I don't know what happened after that. But I'm sure
we
could do some research on it and find out.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure the schools will have some kind of reaction to it because the schools themselves were not aware this was going on.
Right. Which, by the way, is also hard for me to believe that you have like a head coach. If according to one of according to the affidavit, one of the head coaches, the former tennis coach of Georgetown, ultimately got millions of dollars. It was well over $2 million. I think it was $2.7 million over the years. In one case alone, he made $400,000. I guess some people don't spend their money, but how is it not known by others? How does someone who has made $2.7 million, you know, people love to talk. They love to brag. They love to tell secrets. And I just, it's hard for me to believe that others in those schools didn't know.
This would be my question, because I think it would be the question of anybody. So you let a student in because you say that they're a good tennis player, which means what you're stating is we're not going to give them a scholarship, but there's a possibility they're going to be a walk-on.
Right.
So what happens at that point? They decide not to walk onto the team so you don't have to face the fact that they can't even hit a tennis ball over the net when it comes at them at 5 miles an hour? That would be my question at that point. How many students are allowed into that program before there's suspicion that something must be going on here because obviously these people can't play tennis?
Right. And we know that their parent is rich. We know their parent is a celebrity or whatever the case might be.
Yeah. So I haven't seen, maybe there's a story out about the specifics of the tennis program. I haven't seen it yet.
Right.
But that's my question.
One example. And I think it would, again, you're going to have to work really hard to convince me that others at that school didn't know. That at least suspect strongly that something was going on. Yeah, I don't buy it. People love to tell secrets,
You and I have talked about one of the problems with the conspiracy is you have more than one person who knows. And the more people that knows, the more likely that somebody will strike a deal with police or, might let it out. Your odds go up that you will be caught as soon as you have more than one person involved in it. I just don't know how you could get away with it. And I don't know how long this coach was a tennis coach for and how many years it precisely went on. We know that he or she, I don't know if even if it's a he or she.
But yeah, I don't either.
But we know that the tennis coach made a significant amount of money over a period of time. How could no one not notice that these kids who were getting the preferential treatment ended up not being, I'm assuming they didn't end up on the tennis team.
Right.
So they weren't scholarship, right? They were just, they had to be walk-ons.
Right.
You were just getting them, we can get a great walk-on student.
Did they all fake injuries after being admitted?
I don't know. I want to hear the specifics on that court case.
Well, because I don't, I'm just throwing out theories. Because otherwise, you're going to have a lot of explaining to do to people, a lot of people on the fly. If you're the AD of that school. But,
by the way, when we keep getting input here, and we addressed it yesterday about the IRS, we don't know if they claimed, those that use it as a charitable deduction, we don't know if they claimed it on their IRS forms or not. But I guarantee you, with federal prosecutors, if they did do that, the federal prosecutors have caught that.
I suspect we're not done, or they're not done, the authorities aren't done just yet with this entire thing.
No. But if the feds are going after you, they've got a guilty plea from him, and they've gone after all the parents, obviously they have an idea as to whether they used it as a deduction, and they will find that. They're not going to, believe me, they're not going to escape on the IRS portion of it.
Yeah, somebody made the point that we have talked about before yesterday when analyzing this, saying, you know, there's a decent chance that most of these people won't see jail time because they're going to make a plea agreement. They're going to make a plea deal. And the reason they're going to make a plea deal is because when the feds show at your door, they've got you.
Yep.
You're dead to rights at that point.
I had an old girlfriend who used to work for defense lawyers that represented drug clients who got hit by the feds. And she always told me, she said she always felt sympathy when she would interview for these defense attorneys. She'd do extensive interviews with the suspects. And she said, I just felt so sorry for them. She goes, I know they committed drug crimes, but you felt so sorry for them because they had this confidence that they were going to somehow skate from the federal government. And when the federal government comes at you at that level, they've got you.
Yeah, it's over. Unless you're a president.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We go to Kyle in Atlanta about the college admissions scam. Hi, Kyle. You're on Red Eye Radio.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, good.
So I just want to get your opinion, maybe new thought on this. So the kids who have been there, gotten the degrees from these universities already, I'm of the opinion that the degrees themselves should not be rescinded. Regardless of how the kids got in, they still did the work. They still earned the degrees. I doubt their parents were helping them through that process. So I just want to get your guys' thoughts on that.
It depends, I guess, on the situation, because I'm, you know, the ever skeptic. I would think to myself, well, wait a minute, if they cheated to get in, how do I know that they didn't cheat? Or somebody helped them to get in, like a coach, right? How do I know that that coach didn't, you know, help their grades along? How do I know that this whole thing wasn't a sham? And so I would have to investigate.
Right. I mean, but that still happens now, right?
Well certainly. But
D1 college athletes, it still happens.
Well, certainly. And it should have that kind of oversight. So that means there really shouldn't be any exception to that, that if they got through, they got into the school fraudulently. By the way, this is all up to the decision of the schools. Each school will review it, and they may go on a case-by-case basis. Who knows? But if they got in on a fraudulent basis, then many will say they shouldn't have been there in the first place. We don't know that they will rescind any degrees. We have no idea. We're just speculating here as to how far a school could go, but it is up to the school. If they believe that that degree shouldn't have happened because it is a result of fraud, then that's up to the school, and they make that decision.
I can see it. I can see a school saying, okay, it wasn't the student's fault. They can stay. I can see in another case where they said, look, the student knew, the parents knew. Mm-hmm. They obviously knew they got into this university by fraudulent means. We cannot in good faith or for the credibility of our degrees and the integrity of our school allow this to continue. We're rescinding the degree.
Right. Because in some ways they may feel like, well, we're essentially rewarding this kind of behavior. And you may say the student didn't know anything, but they had to have known something at some point.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning. Thank you for being here. In the news today, fascinating to find out that I was reading the Wall Street Journal yesterday that federal authorities, they found out about the college admissions scam because they were pursuing a securities fraud case last spring when a person involved in that investigation, a financial executive hoping for leniency, mm-hmm. said he had information of great interest on another matter. That matter was, he said, the head women's soccer coach at Yale University had sought a bribe in return for getting his daughter admitted to the Ivy League school, and that's what got it started.
People love to talk, especially when it's going to help them.
Yep. This was another case, a securities fraud case. The person and one of the people involved in it said, I'll help you out.
I love to talk.
The head women's coach at Yale tried to get a bribe.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. From 2011 to 2018, prosecutors say parents paid a total of $25 million mm-hmm. to William Singer.
Yep.
33 parents charged, but the report out there that from Singer himself, over 760 families that he helped over that roughly 8-year period.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep. Eventually, someone's going to talk. And that's what happened. One person. That's why it's so hard to believe that others at the school, at the universities, didn't know. I'm not saying they're guilty of taking money themselves, but it's hard to believe they didn't know.
Look, this is going to be every network is going to be doing some kind of special on this. I can almost guarantee it.
Sure.
And they're going to be talking to people, and they're going to be talking to friends and say, well, yeah, now that you mention it, I did see that something did seem suspicious here, but we didn't think it was enough to go to police. Hmm. You're going to hear that all the time.
Yeah.
I think. But just get prepared for the bombardment of different documentaries and everything on this, because If you want a story about the elite and privileged breaking the law to get an advantage, you probably can't find a better story, can you?
No, I think this is it.
Meanwhile, the United States has grounded the 737 MAX planes. You and I talked about what we believe was media bias on it, making it seem like, well, the United States finally was dragged along because all the other countries did it. And Trump, this was a favorite from the mainstream media yesterday. Uh-huh. Trump was leading from behind on this issue. When you actually look at the issue, it was yesterday morning where the FAA through the NTSB was able to look at all the information that they got from Arian LLC, that is a company that provides air traffic surveillance. They've got, you know, satellites all over the place, and they were able to supply the details, because what they do here, apparently, according to the Wall Street Journal, Arian uses equipment on satellites to track data transmitted by a plane's transponder, including a flight speed, altitude, heading, and position. Updates are provided at intervals less than every 8 seconds to offer a global near real-time picture of flights. Such data can be used to reconstruct the flight path and spot occurrences, whether planes are flying erratically or not. That's a quote there from the Wall Street Journal. And it was yesterday morning that they were able to get that all information and understand that information. And they apparently saw a tie-in between the Lion airplane crash late last year and the crash in Ethiopia. And at that time is when the FAA decided, okay, it's time to shut down those planes here in the United States until we can figure it out. But
right.
That's actually how it came about. And as the FAA said, no, we didn't do it because everybody else did it. We did it because we got the information that made us at that point. We got the facts that made us say, okay, it's time to ground him.
Yeah, this is what the FAA had said all along. We're going to need something, some kind of data, something to back it up if we're going to ground these planes. And it requires the president to get involved, but it doesn't start without the FAA saying, all right, we've got something here. And they, along with their Canadian colleagues, counterparts, saw that data and said, okay, the data is enough. It doesn't tell us exactly what happened, but it tells us that these two incidents were similar in nature. And that's all we need to know to say that there is a safety concern possibly with the aircraft. And I don't think that's unreasonable. But the media made it sound like Trump's so stupid, it took him this long to see what everybody else in the world could clearly see. Didn't work that way. Trump didn't make the decision. The FAA made the decision. And after they reached out to him and he had a phone conference with them and the CEO of Boeing to make sure that, you know, they were aware of what this is going to be. Because it's until further notice. You have a number of airliners or airline companies, rather, around the world and nations that are waiting on delivery for of more MAX 8 and MAX 9s. You have, I don't know how many they were waiting on, Ethiopian Airlines. I think they were waiting on a couple more dozen. I mean, that they had ordered. I don't know how soon that was, what the timeline was as to when they were to be delivered. But I think this is the way to go. This is based on something scientific. And the reporting was all over the place. Even The Hill got it wrong. Here's what I think, just giving them the benefit of the doubt at The Hill, that because in one, here what I think happened is they did an update. And the problem with posting everything online and you do an update, you need to correct things that counter, you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
In other words, you
write a story one way,
yeah,
and then you do the update and you add a sentence into there, but you don't delete the one sentence that contradicts the whole point. So it seems like you're contradicting yourself.
And that's the whole thing with The Hill, because The Hill had written that the FAA, and they even had quotes, saw similar patterns in terms of the data, similar patterns in the way those two aircraft crashed. And then in the next paragraph, they said that the Canadian officials found similar data. However, the acting FAA administrator did not say whether or not he found the same. Well, you just said that in the paragraph before.
Right.
So I'm guessing that was because it was an oversight because of an update. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. But please reread before you post. The point being is that the media needs this to look like Trump fumbled this. If they could, they would blame Trump, and maybe someone has already and we didn't hear it, blame Trump for both crashes. It actually might already be happening. So that's kind of where the media is.
Did Ocasio-Cortez speak out on this yet?
Well, I mean, the New York Times. The New York Times writes, you know, that the Trump administration and their headline, something to the effect the Trump administration grounds the Max airline or the Max airplanes after days of pressure. The implication there is they did it as a result of the pressure coming from other nations, but that's not what happened.
That's not the case. No.
No. You can say the FAA should make a decision right away because safety is more important. You could have an argument about the administrator, about the call that was made, about how they make calls or why, or how it works here in the U.S. Keep in mind, in many parts of the world, their airlines are run and completely controlled by the government. We're just partially controlled by the government. we're not quite there yet.
For the moment.
We're not state-owned.
Well, yet. Our airlines will never be controlled by the government because they're all going to be shut down.
Exactly.
So,
but the, you know, the point being is that a lot of people, well, the media made it seem like that Trump's so stupid he can't see what's right in front of him.
Well, no, I think you're right. You can have a debate. You can have a debate on anything, but you can have a debate saying, look, as soon as a flight goes down, all those airplanes should be taken out of service.
Right.
Well, that would have meant that after the Houston cargo plane accident crash, that all 767s are taken out of service until you find out what happens to that plane. That is not the normal procedure that is done.
No, because it's you done. Saw the disruptive event that took place in terms of air travel yesterday. It wasn't just worldwide, globally. The disruption in air travel became because a lot of flights were canceled, and there was weather here in the States, but there was there were a lot of situations where they were canceling flights, clearly here in the U.S. as a result of those aircraft now being taken out of service. But then globally, the same thing. So you're talking about, you know, thousands, probably, I don't know here in the States how many, but certainly thousands of people who are affected at one time. And then the indirect effect of someone else, then another flight maybe being delayed as a result of this one being canceled and so on. So it is disruptive, and I'm not saying it shouldn't happen, certainly if they're not safe or if there's suspicion, at least something that warrants the investigation, a full investigation on those aircraft.
Well,
that needs to happen.
But we had stated this from the very beginning. The standard from the United States was clear. It wasn't what Trump wanted. It was... when we find, we're going to go through all the data, and so far we can't find anything. When we find data that shows there might be a similarity between the two accidents, we will shut down those, we will take those planes out of service.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly what they did.
Right.
So there, it wasn't, you can have the debate, but don't change the truth of the actual story.
Yeah, don't change
don't
the
say
facts.
It was the pressure of the other countries that made the FAA do it.
Right.
Because there is no indication that that's the case.
No.
That it was specifically done because they found the tie-in because of the new data that they received on Wednesday morning. You can still have the debate, but don't write fake news.
If you can write if the editorial board comes out and says, hey, we really don't approve of the way the FAA handled this, and we would like to see a different type of procedure so that the flying public here in the States and worldwide is kept safe, you can have that debate.
You can have the debate and say, look, we should have a standard that if two of the same type plane go down, that they're all taken out of service and at least inspected.
Right.
You can have that debate. We're not talking about that debate. We're talking about writing the truth in an actual story.
Of how it actually, that actually happened.
And I know we may be getting into the minutiae for some people, but we think it's important to show where media bias starts.
Right.
Let's blame Trump for this. Trump should have followed what the rest of the world did. See, Trump didn't follow what the rest of the world did. He's an independent cowboy just out there doing whatever he wishes to do whenever he wishes to do it. And that's not the case. Don't try to make that implication. This was based on what the FAA said their standards were. And when they reached that standard, that's what they did. They took the planes out of service once they found what they believe is a tie-in. Now, it may not be. We may find out that it's not why both crashed. But they feel early on there was a tie-in by the GPS satellite surveillance, that there were some similarities, and at that point they said, okay, we need to ground it.
Yeah, by the way, just so I'm clear here, the headline at the New York Times, Boeing planes are grounded in U.S. after days of pressure. That's how exactly verbatim
right.
the headline. But in the story, they actually point out how the FAA received new data, and they compared it with what Canada found, and they found the similar thing. They found the similar pattern that Canada found, which was a similar pattern between the two flights that crashed.
And I'm sure the editors will defend the headline by saying, but there was pressure, and they did do it. Yeah, but the two aren't related.
You're implying that pressure led to it.
Right, that there was the pressure was the cause of the United States making that decision.
As we if, know it as might if the be, U.S. had to give in.
We know it might be too minutiae for some, but we think it's important to bring it up because we immediately caught it and said, that's media bias. As soon as we came in our pre-show meeting, it was one of the first things that you and I said to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And doing our own independent research and reading probably different periodicals throughout the day on it, we both came to the same conclusion. It's like, Eric, do you see the media's not covering it correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Here's what I saw. Here's what I saw. Same here. And what are the facts? These are the facts.
Right.
And that's where we come to the, I guess, our saying, if the two idiots overnight can understand it and figure it out, they can too.
Right. But they choose not to.
866-90-RED-EYE.
I'm Max Armstrong, and I'm honored to tell you about Ag Day 2019.
And the legendary farm broadcaster, voicing this year's National Agriculture Day video promotion, is among those celebrating National Agriculture Week this week and National Ag Day Thursday, with events scheduled throughout the nation to raise awareness of the importance of farm food and fiber in everyday life. In Washington, D.C., the National Press Club hosts National Ag Day events, including a youth panel discussion moderated by Agriculture Undersecretary Stephen Sensky, and a newsmaker panel discussing challenges and opportunities in the current farm trade climate. Among the panelists, USDA Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs Ted McKinney.
We are in a time where we are revisiting what it means to have free, fair, and reciprocal trade.
More details about National Ag Day and National Ag Week are available online at www.agdayalloneword.org. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Elsewhere in the news, Beto O'Rourke is supposed to announce today that he is running for president of the United States on a platform of...
I got nothing.
I don't know.
I mean, that's his platform. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I got nothing. That's what it will say on the sign.
And that's not just from us.
Nope.
Earlier today, we read the editorial from Slate.com, or parts of the editorial from Slate.com, the liberal publication that said, why is he running? He doesn't even know. Except he's running on the platform of to bring everybody else together, and there's too much partisanship going on. But he himself says he doesn't know how he will change that partisanship. And it was amazing to read in Slate.com where they said, forget about being specific on any of the issues. He won't even generalize on the issues besides, I'm not going to tell you, you know, don't ask me what I am, because I'm for the people and I'm for the bringing the people together. So don't try to say that I'm a progressive, or don't try to say that I fit this particular label, because I fit the label of helping all the American people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's your forecast.
There are reports of more than 1,000 drivers stranded in Colorado Springs, that area of the Front Range in Colorado. Governor Polis declares a state of emergency as the bomb cyclone or very low pressure area has paralyzed the region. Yesterday afternoon, the winds were gusty from Texas into Colorado. There was a 97-mile-an-hour wind gust recorded at the Colorado Springs Airport. 6 to 10 inches for northern El Paso County. 80-mile-an-hour winds at the Denver International Airport, which closed all its runways yesterday afternoon. Many interstates in the region are closed or impassable at this hour. So if you're traveling I-70 in Colorado, I-25 from Colorado up through Wyoming into Montana, you're going to want to check ahead for local conditions. Widespread power outages in the region, too. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Have one oar in the water, even bribery won't get you on the USC rowing team. Gary and Eric on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's go to Bill in Westland, Michigan, about the college admission scam. Hi, Bill. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Who do I have here? Am I speaking to Ed Hurley?
Nope. Eric.
Gary McNamara.
Yeah. And Gary.
Yes. Go ahead.
Gary, how do you do? I listen to your show every night.
Thank you very much.
I want to say, hey, well, you're very welcome. You're very welcome. You and Ed really put on a great show every night. And I want to say,
we'll tell
listen,
Ed.
Your announcer,
thank you.
Mm-hmm. Your announcer sounds a hell of a lot like me. Listen to this.
All right.
This is Red Eye Radio.
Okay.
With Gary McNamara.
Great job there, Bill. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
I'm sorry we lost the connection.
Yes.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, we lost the connection when I hung up on you.
He clearly was...
drunk.
Not on the same narrative that we were on. So, Ed...
yeah, we'll tell Ed, whoever the hell that is.
What do you...
Ed. Who do I have here? I don't know. You tell me. Who'd you call? It's the IRS. And you need to pay your taxes now.
Oh. I'm sorry. Still
wonder if his parents paid to get him into college.
I'm still laughing about Ed...
Yeah,
he had me completely lost. I'm like, is he listening to our show?
I know.
I said, wait a minute. He got my name right.
I got an email for about, it was from the same person for about 6 or 7 months. Hey, could you let Jerry know? And I'm thinking, who is Jerry? Who am I supposed to be telling? I thought they had emailed the wrong person. All right. Okay.
So,
you know, they make hearing aids now.
The other news is, I want to make sure we get this out, because this is really, the news is things that are unique, and this is unique because it really hasn't happened since 1985.
Yeah, right.
Now, I could not have told you who the Gambino crime family boss is in New York. I wouldn't even have known anymore. Frank Cali. Was shot dead outside of Staten Island home yesterday. Mm-hmm. Apparently the mob's into, this is what he was known for, heroin and OxyContin. But he was shot, assassinated outside his house. I don't know if there's any new details on it. But Gambino crime boss Francisco Frankie Boy Cali was assassinated in front of his Staten Island home. This from the New York Post Wednesday night in a stunning gangland hit. Caller was gunned down in front of his Brink mansion about 9:20 p.m. His wife and young child were inside. The gunman sped off in a blue pickup truck after the hit. He is the first mob boss to be killed in New York, murdered in New York, since John Gotti ordered the murder of then-Gambino boss Paul Castellano in 1985 at Sparks Steakhouse in Midtown. You just think about that. I mean, the length of time, and you and I talked about this earlier, how there really isn't much focus from the media anymore on the mob, like there used to be.
Right, yeah.
And I think there will be after this murder. I do believe that you will have, I think, more documentaries coming out, because there has always been a fascination in the public about how the mob works. But we have heard that because of RICO laws, the reach of the mob has been severely diminished over the last couple of decades, right? I mean, that's what we're told.
Right.
I just wonder how powerful they are and what are they into today? Heroin, other drugs, as the New York Post noted here. But just how widespread is the mob today? What is their reach? And I guess when I say their reach into business, into protection, into gambling, into prostitution, and I don't know what the answer is, but I wonder what law enforcement would say. What is their reach today? And what is the type of money that they bring in today compared to what they were bringing in? And I'll go back to the 1980s when Castellano was shot. Compared to the money that they brought in at that time, what kind of money are they bringing in today?
Right. Well, okay. Think about, because of technology, how sophisticated any investigation would be. Because of the laws that have changed, how sophisticated any investigation could be, or thorough or efficient any investigation can be. When you're unknown, it would be constant. I don't know how you would get away with anything, honestly. I really don't. Because I don't know how you would trust that there aren't FBI informants everywhere. I don't know how you would trust people that have been on the inside for a while, for a long time. I don't know how you would trust conducting business. How do you do that? So I think it likely becomes, because you're unknown, it's different. When it comes to the Mexican cartels, first of all, much mm-hmm. larger organizations,
right?
But those operating within the cartel, they're not known, although the heads of the cartel may be. Most of the operators are not, so it may work that same way in these crime families, but I just don't know how in the world you get away with what you used to get away with.
What I found interesting was in the New York Post story where they said that Kali was a real quiet, old-school boss, and he infused the family with a new crop of immigrant Italian gangsters and focused on the heroin and OxyContin trade.
There's your answer.
Sources told the Post. Exactly.
There's your answer. Yep. The unknowns. You're the known, so you're quiet. You keep a low profile. But you're bringing in people to do your work. That's much like what the cartels do. Those who do, you know, the jobs for the cartels, the people on the street aren't known, and they're evolving. It's a revolving door, sort of, in that many of them end up dead. But again, it's not you would. You populate your organization with people, with new people all the time. maybe another reason to be strong on border security?
I thought the same thing when they say immigrant,
right?
When they use the new crop of immigrant Italian gangsters, my first thing was, well, is that legal or illegal?
It would be hard to believe, I guess, that it would be legal for all of them.
Well, then
maybe a couple of them.
Then that's another question of tightening up.
Yes.
The laws against illegal immigration in the United States.
Right.
And is New York a sanctuary city?
Yep. Once you get here, you're good. Low profile. Stay quiet. Keep your mouth shut. Then when you're the head of the family, you keep your mouth shut. You don't do anything. You know, the only thing that could be exchanging hands is money. And you know what? With bitcoins, you don't even have to do that. Seriously.
And finally, Lisa Page's testimony, the former FBI lawyer who was all part of the Peter Strzok, Comey, McCabe a group in there, and her testimony coming out 2 days ago, which really got into the media yesterday, because part of the thought was now, and this is because Comey was the darling of the left and the talk shows after his book came out, and he seemed to be quiet on social media. I didn't see anything from him yesterday on social media, because one of the questions that came up was Lisa Page's testimony that, no, we went. And she apparently talked about the two lawyers in the Department of Justice that kept pushing back and saying, no, we can't go after Hillary. But they went to the Department of Justice multiple times saying, we believe we have a case of gross negligence of Hillary Clinton violating the Espionage Act. And we believe we have a case to prosecute in the Department of Justice. They went to them several times. Now, what several means, I don't know. Is that two? Is that three? Is it four? We don't know. But it was multiple times. We know that. It was more than once, according to what she testified. And they pushed back and said no. And this brings us up to the whole point of, was Comey lying? And that's the question. Whether it was under oath or in his proclamation or in his interviews, was Comey lying?
Right.
When he said his decision was independent of anybody else. Because that does seem to contradict his testimony when she says they were for, they wanted to prosecute, and the Department of Justice did not want to prosecute. That's not the story that Comey told, is it?
Nope. He did this on his own. In one case, during testimony, he was almost boastful about it.
I didn't hear any defense from the Democrats or any attack.
Right. Of her
of her or her testimony as, right. Or as to whether it was fault or the fact that it seems to contradict Comey.
Right. None. There was none. I mean, that's the first thing you would want to do.
And does this also mean that Loretta Lynch wasn't telling the truth when she said, oh, we've left this completely up to the FBI to make that decision?
Right.
Apparently not.
We'll go based on their recommendation.
Apparently not. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Cold weather can be tough on diesel engines, causing fuel to gel and clog up filters. Stay prepared this winter with the proper fuel additives for your truck. Adding a cold weather additive to your maintenance routine is the easiest way to prevent fuel gelling. Diesel fuel is full of paraffin wax, an element designed to improve your fuel's viscosity and lubrication properties. The lower the temperature outside, the faster the paraffin wax in your fuel will gel up. This can lead to clogged fuel filters or fuel that is too solid to flow. Shop shelves are full of different fuel additives, but the one you need to keep an eye out for is a cold weather additive to help fight fuel gelling this winter. Stop into a TA truck service near you to shop our selection of cold weather additives today.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. So we'll see where this whole cheating scandal goes and how far it goes. Remember, the ringleader said 750 families. They've only really indicted 33 people, right?
Yeah, so far.
In this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you wonder if they will go any further. And if they don't, why won't they go any further? That would be the question that I would have. If you help more than 750 families in this admission scheme, why are you only going after 33? Is the statute of limitations up on some?
Could be. Because if they don't have evidence of illegal activity, there's nothing to go on. He could say something, but keep in mind they would have to go back and gather evidence on. You know, if he says, I helped other families, let's say he starts naming names. Well, they're going to have to go back and gather evidence and do all those investigations.
Well, if he pleaded guilty, will they do that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because he's not fighting it, I'm guessing.
And he could be willing to cooperate in order to get a shorter sentence. But I don't know what you do if you don't have evidence that was the intent, that they knowingly did something wrong, those other families.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.